thunder to start off with. So anyway, one of the things that I find challenging about the subject of marriage, divorce, and remarriage is a lot of times you're discussing this with people who have average Bible knowledge, or maybe even less than average Bible knowledge. And what I find is really helpful is when somebody can take something that, you know, is a complex mess and then simplify it down to something that's easy to digest and understand. And that's what I want to try to do with the subject of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And that's what I want to try to do with 1 Corinthians chapter 7 as we go through it. I want to be clear that there are a lot of things that I probably won't cover in here because we're all trying to stay in our lane and deal with the subject matter that was assigned to us. And a lot of other things that maybe could be brought in that you could say, well, you know, what you're saying needs to be modified by this passage over here. I feel like that's already been done. And so understand as I go through this, that what I'm trying to cover is what 1 Corinthians chapter 7 has under consideration. And we need to take what everything else that's already been said in the other text and make sure that that harmonizes and fits whatever conclusions we come to in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. So what I'd like to do is just go through very briefly what I understand to be the flow of thought in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Because I think if I'm trying to explain this to someone who has average Bible knowledge, looking at the context is something that they can understand. And they can follow that flow of thought. And that can help them to come to a conclusion on a verse that may be challenging, such as verse 15. So just looking at this, and first, by the way, 1 Corinthians 7 is not the easiest chapter in the world to deal with either. But it starts off and we see that Paul's asking some questions, or has been asked some questions, and he's answering some questions. And it seems to be that the question or questions that have been asked are regarding, as Christians, is it more advantageous to be married or to be single? And so he starts off and he says, you know, it's good to be single. But it's not always best to be single. And because of fornication, it may be better to be married. And so he starts off immediately by saying, you know, it's good to be single. You can be single and serve the Lord. And that may even be better in some situations, as he'll explain later on in the chapter. But marriage is also good. And so there's no hard and fast answer given to the question, is it better to be single or better to be married? But then he says, but if you are married, then you better stay married. That's God's rule. That's God's law. So as they're looking at this, I envision that the Corinthians are saying, well, you know, I want to do whatever I can to serve the Lord in the best way. So you tell me what's the best state to be in, and I'll make sure that I'm in that state. And he says, if you're married, then you stay married. That's what God's law says about that. And so he makes that pretty clear in as he goes through here in verse 10 and 11. However, he says something else as well. And that is that if you're divorced, and Stephen made this point, that if you're divorced, can you still serve the Lord? I don't care if you answer my questions as long as you don't take off with them. You can still serve the Lord if you're divorced. All right, but it has to be in line with what the Lord has taught on that. And so either remain single or be reconciled to your husband. So it's possible to serve the Lord whether you're single, whether you're married, or even if you are divorced. Well, another question that comes up, and I see why, and we'll talk about this in a minute, is, well, what if I'm married to an unbeliever? Stay married. Well, what if they don't want to be married? Then let them depart and be at peace. And then he continues on through the chapter, and basically he says, you know, you can serve the Lord faithfully in whatever state you're in. If you're a Jew, if you're a Gentile, if you're a slave, if you're free, if you're married or if you're unmarried, I believe is implied in that, because that's the overall context that he's dealing with, is that you can serve the Lord in whatever state. However, you need to make sure that whatever state you're in, you're staying in line with God's commandments regarding that state. That seems to be the overall idea that I get out of 1 Corinthians chapter 7 as I read through that. Now, The particular verse that we want to deal with is verse 15. That's nestled in the context of this, if I'm married to an unbeliever. And let's just read the verse, although it's been read several times already. Verse 15, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. But if the unbeliever departs, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. And what some see in this is they see a second exception for divorce and the freedom to remarry. And so, and I'll tell you, if you're trying to talk with someone that has average Bible knowledge, they're able to understand that language there in such a way that they could draw that conclusion and see that. And I'm sure probably many of you have had somebody point that out. But look right here. It says that not under bondage in such cases. So what exactly is under consideration here? And I want us to look at the arguments that are made for the freedom to remarry in as simple a form as I can put it in. Of course, they can be more complex than this. But a lot of the complexities have already been dealt with in the other discussions that have been given here. Many see, or some see this, as this is new legislation that's given, that has not been given elsewhere in the Bible. And so what they do with this is they say, you really can't take what's been said in Matthew 19 or in other places. What you have to realize here is Paul is now giving new information for this situation that is different. And they base that upon the language in verse 10 and verse 12. And you notice in verse 10, Paul says, now to the married, I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband. And even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. A husband's not to divorce his wife. But then look at verse 12. But to the rest, I, not the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she's willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he's willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. So there's a contrast set up here. That the Lord said something, and now Paul's saying, now I'm going to say something that the Lord didn't say. And they really build upon that. And they make this point that there's this difference here. These two things cannot harmonize together. Paul is saying that there's new legislation being given here in this situation. I was looking for a quote that I had here. Yeah, James Bales in his book, Not Under Bondage, he says this. He says, once one recognizes that Christ in the Gospels did not speak to, did not issue commandment to, the marriage of unbelievers or mixed marriages, one cannot scripturally bind Matthew 19 on the deserted believer of 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 15. So what they're saying is when Paul says that I, not the Lord, he's saying, what the Lord has said does not apply to this situation. I'm giving new legislation on this situation. Let's back up and just think about this just a little bit. Going back to verse 10. To the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband. What Paul is doing here is he's introducing the Lord's teaching to the situation of, is it better to be single or is it better to be married? And he's already made the point. You can serve the Lord in either state. But if you're married, you better stay married. You know why? Because the Lord commanded that. And so we go back to teachings like Matthew chapter 19. And what did the Lord say about that? Well, what God has joined together, let not man separate. So you remain married. Do not depart. Do not divorce. The Lord's given instruction in this. Well, what if the wife does depart or does divorce? Well, the Lord said something about that too. Because he said that anyone divorces his wife and marries another, except for sexual immorality, commits adultery. Therefore, what the Lord has said about that would let you know that you either need to remain unmarried or to be reconciled to your spouse. That's what the Lord has stated. So What Paul does is he takes the Lord's teachings and he applies it to the situation. They're wanting to know, well, should I'm married, should I remain married? Is that better for me to serve the Lord married or single? Jesus had said something about that. You remain married. That's what he said about it. But then when he gets to verse 12, and he says to the rest, I, not the Lord, say. Now, some, I think, have taken this to say, now Paul is just saying, now, God hadn't said anything about this at all, and so I really don't know, but I'm going to give my opinion here. I don't think that's what's being said. And most of the people that I've heard making the argument from verse 15 that you're free to remarry if you've been deserted, don't hold that position either. Most of them, what I've read, hold the position that he's speaking as an inspired apostle. And now he is looking at a different category of marriage, which I would agree with. He's looking at a category of marriage that Jesus had not specifically addressed, and that is, what about mixed marriages? Jesus didn't say anything about mixed marriages. And again, I would just say, you know, why would this come up? Why would this question about mixed marriages perhaps be relevant in the mind of a first century Christian? Can I ask for any comments in this session or not? Okay, all right. I want your thought on that. Yes. So what did the Old Testament, what did God said to Israel about marrying the pagans of the land? You can't. Did they ever do that? And then what did God say about it? He said it was unholy. It was unholy, and what were they to do? They were to separate. Okay, so what had Jesus commented on about that? Nothing. Jesus had not said anything about it. So when Paul says that I, not the Lord, I don't think he's saying, now I'm not speaking by inspiration, I don't have any instruction from the Lord on this. What he's saying is Jesus in his earthly ministry had not addressed this subject. And I can definitely understand why a Christian in the first century, looking back at the majority of the scripture that they had, and seeing how God had dealt with mixed marriages with Israel, would have a real big question about, I'm married to a pagan. I don't know if I should be in this marriage or not. Well, Paul is about to give some instruction on that. The question becomes, is this totally different legislation than what Jesus has said? Bales makes the argument that you cannot apply what Jesus said to this situation. Jesus had not said anything about it. And therefore, if we tried to apply it, we would be arguing with Paul. I don't see it exactly that way as we go through here. But let me mention to you what is the understanding here. You've got two different laws being given in the mind of those who would argue that verse 15 allows for the freedom to remarry. That you have what Jesus said to believers. What he stated, and by the way, they make a strong point, at least the ones that I've read make a strong point, that what Jesus stated was only to two believers in a covenant relationship with him. Matthew 19. But now you have Paul legislating a new marital law that has to do with those in mixed marriages. And the difference is this. That what had Jesus said about those in, what had Jesus stated about those who divorced? Could they remarry? No. We're this far along, no. Jesus said no. All right, except for sexual immorality, but generally no. Well, what does Paul say about those in mixed marriages when the unbeliever departs? Verse 15. Let them depart. And, he goes further, not under bondage in such cases. So they see that as a big difference. That these two laws in their mind cannot be compatible. That Jesus said for the believers who divorce, they have to remain unmarried or be reconciled. But for a believer who is deserted by an unbeliever, who was divorced by an unbeliever, they are no longer under bondage. And therefore, should be able to remarry. And that's the argument that is made from that. So this must be different from what Jesus had previously taught. We cannot apply Matthew 19 to this situation because Paul says Jesus didn't say anything about this. The second argument that goes along with this has to do, by the way, Bales makes the point, says different standards are applied by the Spirit to different categories of marriage. And therefore, it's just not right to try to apply what Jesus said to a situation that he had not addressed. The second argument that they make is to take this statement, not under bondage, and say it must refer to the marriage bond. And I really appreciated what Mike said yesterday about the term marriage bond. And I'm not going to follow his advice on that in this lesson because, first of all, when I prepared this, I don't think I had the clarity on it that I appreciate you giving me yesterday. Secondly, the marriage bond is a term that I've heard used and have read numerous times by those who make this argument. So I'm going to use their language in that as well. But the not under bondage must refer to the marriage bond. That there's no other option there. It couldn't refer to anything else. And therefore, if it says you're not under bondage and the bondage that's under consideration is the marriage bond, then you must be free to remarry. That's the only conclusion that you could come to. So this is the basic argument that is made. You've got an exception being given here by Paul because he's legislating a new marriage law for those that are in mixed marriages. And he's saying that if they're deserted by the unbeliever, then they have the right to remarry because there's no other way you can use that term, not under bondage. So let's look at that a little bit more and see if what that's under consideration. Again, another quote from Bales on this. Not under bondage means the marriage bond is broken and that the believer is free to remarry. First, is Paul legislating a different marriage law for mixed marriages? No doubt Jesus in his public ministry had said something about marriage and about what God has joined together. And he had not addressed mixed marriages between Christians and unbelievers. And so you have this question that would be in, it would be in my mind, and I think it would be in their mind, are these marriages between a Christian and a non-Christian, are they legitimate marriages? Because as you look at God's instruction to Israel, they would not have been legitimate marriages. And so should we continue in this? Does God consider it a legitimate marriage or not? So let me just ask you this, and again, not getting into the explanation. What is Paul's answer to that? Are mixed marriages legitimate marriages or not? Yes, they are legitimate marriages. And how do we know that they are legitimate marriages? Well, first of all, I think when he mentions that in verse 14, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband, otherwise your children would be unclean, but now they are holy. I think he's using language there that would show the distinction between the mixed marriages of the Old Testament that were considered unclean and the mixed marriage between a Christian and an unbeliever. But also, we know that he's saying that these marriages are legitimate because he applies Christ's marriage law to them. And look at what he says. He says, but to the rest, verse 12, I not the Lord say, if a brother has a wife who does not believe and she's willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. Well, that's what Christ had said about legitimate marriages, right? Is that divorce is not what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And so he applies Christ's marriage law to these mixed marriages. And he's saying, yes, they are legitimate in that. And therefore, the believer needs to be willing to submit to Christ's marriage law and not put away their unbelieving spouse. Don't divorce. Paul's application. By the way, just looking at this, I think Paul's applying Christ's marriage law in both situations. He's applying Christ's marriage law to, we could say, two believers that are married together. And he says, don't divorce. Verse 10, don't depart from the husband. Don't divorce. But then in a mixed marriage, what's he doing? He's doing the same thing. He's applying Christ's marriage law and saying, don't divorce, because it's a legitimate marriage in that. What did Christ, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting in verse 10, that the Lord had given instruction on this, what was the application of the Lord's instruction to two believers and one of them had departed or divorced? We've already covered this, so. That's exactly right. All right, so you could still serve the Lord faithfully, right? But you had to remain unmarried or be reconciled to your spouse. Okay, so what about the situation where you have a mixed marriage and the unbeliever departs? And I think that that's under consideration because you would hope the believer would be willing to comply with Christ's instruction on that. But the unbeliever, would you expect them to be compliant to Christ's instruction? Not necessarily. And so, sorry. What was the instruction to the mixed marriage where divorce had taken place? Could they continue to faithfully serve the Lord if divorce had taken place? Yes, they could. And what was the instruction there? Let him depart. And you're not under bondage. You're not under bondage in such cases, but are called to be at peace. And I think that that's significant in thinking about what's under consideration here, that phrase, you're called in peace. What's the opposite of bondage in this, in the context here? Is it remarriage? Okay. Freedom?
Peace.
That seems to be the contrast there, not remarriage. And I think what a lot of people do is they read this and they're reading into the idea of bondage as the marriage bond, as Bales and others have said, and then they're looking at that and say, well, the opposite of that would be freedom, and freedom to what? Freedom to remarry. But that's not what the context says. In the context, you're not under bondage, but he has called us to peace. That seems to be the opposite of the bondage that he has under consideration here. So I want to deal with this idea of the bondage, whether or not the bondage has to be the marriage bond in this. And I don't believe that it does. I don't believe that's what he has under consideration in this. Now, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to get in over my head on this point. And I don't know that this would be necessarily where I would go with someone if they had limited Bible knowledge, if I was going to address this topic. But I'm going to point this out, and some of you who have a lot more knowledge in this, I'm looking for your help as we go through here. But one of the things that doesn't come out naturally in the reading, at least from the New King James and from the King James and several other translations, is the distinction between this idea of being bound to a spouse and not being under bondage in that. Because the words sound pretty similar. Bound and bondage sound pretty similar, and our minds may jump to a conclusion there. And I think that those who make this argument, that's what's happened. But Paul really uses different words there. And some translations point that out. The New King James does not. For instance, in verse 27, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Look at verse 39. A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. That's obviously talking about the marriage bond there, what that God has joined together. We've talked about Romans chapter 7 in verse 2. That same word is used there. And the word that's used there is dio. And it has the idea of tying together. Strong says to bind, to tie, to fasten. And it's used at least in those three instances. But the word bondage there, although some say that it may come from the same root word, but it's a different word. It's dulio, and it has the idea of being enslaved. To enslave, to bring under subjection, Strong says, Thayer says, to make a slave of, to reduce to bondage, metaphorically to give oneself wholly to the needs and service of another, to make oneself a bondsman to him. And so there's a distinction there. ESV, if you're reading from the ESV, I think the ESV says to enslave. There, so it wouldn't. You maybe wouldn't draw that connection between if you're bound by law and then enslaved. You maybe see that distinction there. Young's literal, I believe, says not under servitude. The ISV, not under obligation. The Jubilee says not under slavery. And y'all help me out, those who know the language better, because like I said, I'm getting in over my head and about to get further over my head. That word, either in its verb form or as a noun, is used a lot in the New Testament. Used over 100 times in the New Testament. I don't know of any place, and I've not read of any place, where that word is used to refer to what we would call the bond that God has joined a husband and wife to. It's never described by dulio. By deo, yes. So it's interesting that here, if this is referring to the marriage bond, this would be the only place that I know of that this word is used in describing it as this type of relationship. Now, those who make this argument that, well, yes, it's the same thing. It's the same bond that's under consideration here. Go through and talk about how this word could mean that. How it could be used that way. Okay. But we don't have any examples of it ever being used that way. And so if it is used that way, it's used only here that way. And we may be making an assumption, kind of forcing it in that sense to respond that way. Here's where I'm really getting in over my head. And I would not make this argument because I don't have the... I've not done the study to be able to definitively say that. But I want to bring it up here because I know that many of you do. My understanding is the way this word is used in the Greek grammar, that the tense of it itself would not fit with the idea that this is talking about the marriage bond. And it's interesting because Bales in his book actually uses the Greek tense to make an argument. And even while he was making the argument, I was like, I don't know if that works or not. Here's what I understand. I don't know Greek tense very well, so y'all help me out. But I understand that this is used in the perfect tense. And I've already heard y'all talk about some about the perfect tense. And my understanding of the perfect tense, and y'all help me off if I'm wrong about this, is it has to do with the present, but it also has, it conveys the idea of kind of going back to the past and bringing from the past into the present. Is that, y'all may have a better way of explaining that, those of you who are good students of the Greek. Does anybody have anything they would like to clarify, help me out on that? Would that be accurate or not? Okay. Does it have any connection with the past?
It had to start in the past.
Okay, well, that's what I understood, and that was the point that Bales was making. So Bales makes the point that this has to be talking about the marriage relationship, the marriage bond, because it started in the past. This bondage started in the past and came forward. Okay, I think I'm following you. Except, what is being said about this state of being enslaved here that started in the past and continued to the present? What? Not. So if that's the case, if it's the case that what's really being said here is not that you're in bondage now and you were in bondage in the past, and therefore the bondage must have been the marriage, it is that you're not in bondage now, nor were you in bondage in the past. Well, if this is talking about the marriage bond, were they in the marriage bond in the past? So if he's saying not, then they were not in a marriage bond in the past. So that doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with that. And now, again, like I said, that's over my head. That seems to be a pretty pretty solid argument if all of that's right. I just didn't know if I have the study to make that point very strongly. But I don't even think you have to have that point. I don't think you have to know the Greek tense. I think the context itself would show that doesn't really make sense. But for those of you who have the knowledge of the Greek to be able to make that point, I think that is pretty solid, particularly if the person you're talking to has the knowledge to be able to see that as well. So the idea is you're not in bondage now, nor have you been in bondage in the past. So if we eliminate the idea that whatever he's saying, the bondage that you're not under is not the marriage bond, then we begin to think about, okay, well, what would fit there? And I think the context is really what would lead us in this sense to figuring out what's under consideration. So what is Paul saying in all of this? What's his main point that he's trying to get across? So here's a person, and they're married to an unbeliever, and they're trying to serve the Lord the best they can. What is God's will in this? Well, God's will is for you to stay in that marriage. And as a person who is submissive to the Lord, then it's going to be your responsibility to preserve that marriage in that. However, the situation is brought up, what if that person deserts me, leaves me? What can I do then? That's a bad situation, because in a marriage, you can really only do what you can do. And if here's someone and they're determined to depart, and it's my responsibility to hold the marriage together, well, that's a bad situation, isn't it? Because here I'm responsible for something that I can't do. And I think that that's where Paul steps in and says, you know, if that's the case, and they're determined to depart, let them depart. You're not under obligation, responsibility. You're not enslaved to preserve the marriage if it's beyond your ability to do so. You're called to peace. And so, a believer's responsibility to the marriage does not enslave them to an impossible task. And that's what that would be. It would be an impossible task. If I've got to preserve this marital relationship with a person who does not want to be in it, refuses to be in it, how can I do that? And he's saying, God's not enslaving you to that. You're called to peace. So, can I serve the Lord if I'm married to an unbeliever? Yes, you can. Can I serve the Lord faithfully if the unbeliever divorces me and departs? Yes, you can. What is said about the right to remarry? Nothing is said about the right to remarry. That's not in the context. Paul's not dealing with the believer's right to remarry if the unbeliever deserts. That's not even in the scope of this. The scope of this is, can I serve the Lord married to an unbeliever? Can I serve the Lord if the unbeliever departs? And the answer to both of that is, yes, you can. Yes, you can. He's not talking about the right to remarry. If he is, then that would have to be assumed from this. There would have to be something that would cause us to assume that. And of course, the people making this argument would say, yes, well, the bondage issue. But I think we can point that out. That's not what's under consideration here. So, how do we deal with this? What's the overall idea of 1 Corinthians chapter 7? Well, the overall idea is it's possible to serve the Lord whether you're single, whether you're married, or whether you're divorced. If you're single, what do you need to do to serve the Lord? What's that?
Remain pure.
And that may be by remaining single, or if necessary, you can marry in that. So he deals with that. Well, what if you're married? Stay married. That's exactly right. Don't depart. And that's true. That's true if you're married to a Christian, and that's true if you're married to an unbeliever, right? Well, what if you're divorced? All right. Remain unmarried or be reconciled. Now, the question is, does that conflict with what Paul says to the believer who's been deserted by an unbeliever, been divorced by an unbeliever? Does that change anything there? When he says, you're not enslaved but called to peace, is that different? Would that be contradictory to remain unmarried or be reconciled? I don't see that it would be. And those who make the argument and say, yes, this has to be another married law because those are incompatible. I don't see that those are incompatible. Can you be at peace and be unmarried? Yes. So this idea of you're called in peace, if I'm married to an unbeliever and they're willing to remain in that marriage, can there be peace then? Yes. If an unbeliever, I'm married to an unbeliever and they are determined to depart and leave me, and I let them depart, can there be peace? Now, if I'm married to an unbeliever and they're determined to depart, and I say no, can there be peace? And I think that that's what's under consideration here. So when we look at this, we're not looking at I do see a separate category of marriage here. I don't see a separate law for marriage being given. Nor do I see an exception clause here. Here's another situation besides fornication in which one can remarry. All right, I'm going to go ahead and stop there and turn it over to the question and answer. All right, we can take a break or whatever.
All right, let's take a break for just a few minutes, fellas. We'll come back. Mm-hmm.